Yeah, you're right, Clay. I mean, Cliff, close to Al, close to Mark, the Davis family, and certainly from an economic standpoint or from a viability standpoint, which you mentioned, and for the Raiders to be relevant again, then, yeah, they had to be all in for Vegas. I mean, that's really the only move that the Raiders could have or do to be competitive with everybody else. You know, you're thinking about the valuations of NFL franchises and certainly the revenue and the cash flow that they're able to generate in certain situations with cities or regions. And the Raiders, they just weren't doing that in Oakland anymore. I mean, it was getting tougher and tougher to kind of generate and compete off the field that way. So the move to Vegas was, I mean, the Raiders have been all in, and certainly between Cliff Branch and then, you know, you got Mark Davis, they certainly were all in with the attitude that they thought the move to Vegas would help out a lot.
Pritch, as a former receiver in the league for so many years yourself, you knew, I'm sure you knew so much about his style and watching him, a member of the three Super Bowl championship teams. It's interesting, and I'd love to have this conversation with you. The understanding of what is a Hall of Famer, and it's so subjective on a yearly basis. And I do think now that the Hall has opened up for 20 spots next year, we're going to see people go in that, you know, probably deserve to be in so far. You know, again, it's subjective. I want to ask you about him, though, because, you know, he has the three rings, and I know, that, as Gruden said, it's a subject for another time, but when you look at his numbers, 8.686 yards, 67 touchdowns, they actually are very comparable to two guys he went against in his era, and Johnny Stallworth and Lynn Swann. In fact, his numbers are better than Lynn Swann. What do you think in terms of this? Do you get as a former player, do you get angry when guys don't get in? Do you know it's a subjective vote? I mean, what's Hall of Fame to you when it comes to Cliff Branch? Should he be in, or is this something that needs to be looked at?
Well, of course he should be in. I think it gets convoluted, really, Ed.
Yeah.
When you think about why or what the criteria is, nobody knows.
Right.
First of all, you have somebody that lobbies for a particular player. I remember Terrell Davis having great conversations with Terrell Davis. He's on NFL Network now. And, you know, there was Legwald. You might know Legwald. And he had to lobby for Terrell Davis to get into the Hall of Fame. And it's like you have somebody, an advocate, that has to stand in front of the committee and go over all the stats and basically act as a lawyer or an agent and beg and plead and say, look, my person deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, but when there's no set criteria. And I think that's what upsets everybody. He should be a Hall of Famer first ballot.
Yep.
But he wasn't. You know, Chris Carter wasn't. And they got upset by that. One of the parts that I think the Hall of Fame needs to fix is this notion that if I'm a first ballot Hall of Famer, I'm a better Hall of Famer than you. Like,
yeah.
What is
yeah.
that? You know, there's no separate room for first ballot Hall of Famers. You guys are all in the same room. You guys are all getting the bus, and you're all going into the Hall of Fame. But for some reason, there's just a separation of that, and it bothers me. But that's the ego that we have to deal with too. Cliff Branch is a Hall of Famer, and everybody knows it. Even the committee knows it. But you know what you'll hear? Oh, well, we can't put him in now because we got to put somebody else in. We got to put in an offensive lineman. We got to put in a defensive back. We got to put in. I'm like, you're out of your mind. If a person is a Hall of Famer, put him in. I don't care what you have to get in first priority. And the reason why you have this backlog and you have names on the waiting list is because of the process that you're using. I mean, it's crazy to me. One of the things, when you look at College Football Hall of Fame, you have to be an All-American.
Right.
That's part of the criteria. You have to be an All-American, consistent All-American. And therefore, they eliminate a lot of people that could be on the line or could be a Hall of Famer in college. And I'm one of those. I was a second-team Hall of Famer. So I can never go into the College Football Hall of Fame because I wasn't a first-team All-American. I understand that, and I'm fine with that. But in the National Football League, there's no set criteria that way. And it's all arbitrary, and it bothers a lot of people when everybody knows that Cliff Branch is a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that because I agree with you. Whether you agree with the criteria or not, if you know the criteria going in, then there's no argument. I mean, and if people have a problem with it, then change the criteria, like you said with the college one. My issue with the Hall of Fame always is, and it, again, it's been made huge news this week because they're expanding it to 20 next year because there are backlogged guys here that they have finally realized, whether it be Cliff Branch, whether it be Tom Flores, whether it be Kenny Anderson, whether it be whoever that need to get in. I've always said, why are there specific numbers that you have to stay with or under each year? If you have four guys in a class who are automatics like T.O., then put four in. If you have 10 and it's a huge year where, you know what, you just have a lot of dudes who played in the same era, then put them in. I've always thought it's nonsense that they're restricted to a number. I think that's crazy. You're, like you said, you're a Hall of Famer, you're not. And guys shouldn't have to wait because you've come up with some arbitrary number to, you know, to do this. And the other thing you talked about, and I'll tell you, you love this story, you might have heard it, this presentation. So each Hall of Famer has someone present them. You know, it's almost right. Like a very strange, weird thing with media. But they present them. I loved, you know, Goose told me from Dallas, he presented Emmitt Smith. And usually these presentations take up to 45 minutes. Mm. And Goose, you know, Pritch, Goose told me, he goes, you know what I did? I stood up, I looked at everyone, I said, Emmitt Smith, and I sat down. It's like, who the hell needs to talk about Emmitt Smith? And that's why I get crazy about these things, Pritch. It's like, and I'm in this business, and you've been in this business with media, that our power in this gets a little, in my mind, taken away. I don't think media should have anything to do with it. I think it should be the people who played against these people like you and who knew who the great players were. I have a big problem with our business being involved in any of this.
Well, you have the selection process. I mean, you have the finalists, and I understand that. And then you have the committee, and then you have former Hall of Famers. They vote and all this, but it does come down to the committee. And when they meet, you know, they over-dramatize. They, oh, the yes. committee, we have to get together, and we have to discuss this and discuss that. And when nobody knows what you're talking about. And Jim Flakewald, and this who I was mentioning before, had extensive conversations with him about how he had to lobby or be an advocate or, like you said, present Terrell Davis. And it's like this whole process of the committee and what they formed, it's out of control. The reason why I think they have 20 guys going in next year is like what you said, the backlog.
Yeah.
But the proposition that they're going to face in the future. You got Palomalu, you got Charles Woodson. You have so many guys that are going to be first-time eligible for the Hall of Fame at the same position.
Yes.
And so now what are you going to do? Because you've already been on record stating that, well, we can't get all these positions in at the same time. We got to get other positions in. And now you have this backlog. I mean, Steve Atwater right now is going through something that I can't even believe, that that guy's not in the Hall of Fame. But going back to Cliff Branch, you know, sometimes when a guy retires and then, you know, his numbers are his numbers, these committee members, they forget about the impact. They forget about how that guy played the game. They forget about his speed and how potent it was. They forget about that he took Mel Blount deep, you know, and he's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
They forget about all that, and all they want to do is look at the stat sheet. And that, too, is a problem. Maybe that's why they have these presenters to lobby for them, because these committee members, they didn't remember watching Cliff Branch, or they didn't remember watching it and seeing the three Super Bowls, or the dynamic duel that they had with him and Blitnikoff. And I mean, all of that, Ken Stabler is in, and Blitnikoff is in, and all those other Raider Hall of Famers are in. So how do you cast aside the impact that Cliff Branch made in his era? I mean, it's frustrating. It really is, and I hope they change the process.
14 years in the league, Cliff Branch earned 3 Super Bowl titles, 4 Pro Bowl, 3-time All-Pro, as well as the receiving yard leader in 74 and receiving touchdown leader in 74 and 76 over 14 years. But I think a lot of it started was, not only was it his great style in the pros, but what he did in college at the same alma mater as you, University of Colorado, Boulder. And not only was he a great football player, but at the same time, he always wanted to be a great track star. And I love that the story was that he still wanted to get the NCAA championship record in the 100 meters. And he did so in his final race at the championships in Eugene, which is, you know, title town, track town. And he was able to do that. And then 2 weeks later, he signed by the Raiders. What was it like, though, to kind of like share some of that? You guys had the same kind of background as far as the college career was concerned. What was it like for you as a wide receiver to go in and knowing that Cliff Branch really held all the records and it was really the number one receiver in school history?
Oh, way. I mean, it was everything. You know, I actually arrived at CU as a running back. You know, we were in a wishbone, and I was running a football. But, well, of course, I mean, you know who Cliff Branch is. And when I first got to CU, we had the spring games. And you have the spring games, spring football, whatever. And back then, the alumni would come back. And they would actually suit up and play. They would have a scrimmage. And, oh, man, as a freshman, you know, you're going into your sophomore year, whatever, and here's Cliff Branch coming out on the field, ooh, man, and suited up. I mean, he had just retired. Remember that. He had just retired, not a couple years earlier than that. And here he comes, Jerry Curl and all, out there to ball and play in front of the crowd. And, you know, we had some tremendous alumni. That event went away because, you know, old guys getting hurt and stuff. Nobody wanted to see that. But for me, that was a thrill. I mean, I grew up, you know, 70s, watching 70s football in the 70s. And even though my team was the Cowboys, I mean, you knew who Cliff Branch was. And then when his son, Brent mm-hmm. actually attended, he walked on and made our football team. And you knew about the background of Cliff. But then when you got to meet him, just a tremendous guy. They had a lot of passion for Buff football, Colorado football, and certainly the Raiders. I mean, you talk about a guy who was so proud to talk about his time with the Oakland Raiders. That was Cliff Branch. I mean, he had the time of his life, man, and his passion, his enthusiasm for the game, his confidence for the game. I mean, you just wanted to soak up everything that he would give you. And so as a kid, when I was interacting with him, I mean, that was amazing. And then certainly later on in life, you get to extend that relationship. And it was incredible, man. You get over the shock of losing somebody like Cliff Branch, and then there's a lot to celebrate. There is a lot to celebrate about that man's life.
Just a final thought on Cliff Branch. I want you to hear this. In 19 playoff games, he registered 73 catches for 1,289 yards and 5 touchdowns. That's nearly, you know, 4 receptions a game for nearly 70 yards. His 10 touchdowns in the postseason, better than Lynn Swann's 10 over 9. I mean, what is your enduring memory of Cliff Branch when you think about all that's been said and done, not only off the field but on the field?
I think Cliff was one of the most exciting receivers to play the game. I think his speed was legendary. You know, I don't want to compare guys again, but Lynn Swann was a Super Bowl MVP, and I think that's what put him over the top. I don't believe Cliff got to Super Bowl MVP status, but he was integral, a part of that football team that helped them win 3 Super Bowls, that dynasty. So I don't know why guys get overlooked. You know, Blitnikoff Hall of Famer, Stabler Hall of Famer. I mean, you can go on and on and on. Marcus Allen, when he was there, and but for some reason, guys like Cliff Branch got overlooked, and no diva mentality at all, right? And maybe that's part of it. You know, you got T.O. and people in today's day and age that had that diva mentality as a receiver, and that put them over. Whereas Cliff, you know, it was all about the team. You know, that alumni is probably one of the strongest alumni in the National Football League when you talk about the Raiders.
Yep.
Because of the bond that they formed as they were players, and that was something that we set off of as young players when Cliff Branch and other great Buffs would come around up to CU, and I just think it's tremendous the impact that he had on the game, and you can throw up numbers, and his numbers were outstanding. I think Jerry Rice broke his records, but I just don't understand why people overlooked the great Cliff Branch for so long. I mean, it was just incredible to me.
There's nothing like Napa training camp with that Villapano nut with the beer in his hand talking to the media. That alumni of that team, you're exactly right. Every year, that's the one thing, and we can, you know, give them a hard time for some things, but Pritch is right. Pritch, every year in Napa, they have that alumni weekend, and man, those guys come in droves.
Oh, it's amazing. Incredible. It really is. I mean, Vegas will see and feel that pretty soon, shortly. It's not already. I remember when I was with Lotus, and you know, we did the shows, I think it was Ponchos, and a bunch of Raiders would come out. I know there's all kind of events around the city. I certainly, before the stadium was approved, you know, Mark Davis would bring in Raiders left and right. They met with a lot of officials from the city, and you're going to see. I think it was a softball game too, not too long ago. Raiders versus the Oakland A's, or something like that. Or I was doing some reading, and I think I came across that. But
yeah, Golden Knights. Yeah,
you're going to see. Yeah, the Knights. That's right. You're going to see a humongous presence, and it's going to be impressive. And they're going to need it, though. I mean, you're talking about changing fan bases a little bit, and certainly you want to grow the fan base there in Las Vegas. So you're going to see a lot of greats come to town from the Oakland Raiders.
Well, it's awesome, man. Thank you, Pritch, for coming on with us.
Thank you, Mike.
On today, and let's get in touch with you next week. And thanks for remembering for Cliff in this such a good manner, man.
Thanks, Pritch.
Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
Mike Pritchard, NFL player, good friend of the show.